Hi, I'm Elise.
I'm Matt, and welcome to Pod Wraiths, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we're two friends watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine and sharing both our deep and irreverent thoughts on our favorite Star Trek series.
This week, we're talking about Season 5, Episode 12, The Begotten, teleplay by Rene Echeverria and directed by Jesus Salvador Trevino. The Begotten aired on January 27, 1997.
I can tell you lived in Arizona. All right.
Or New Jersey, for that matter.
Wow, touche. You actually know how to read the accents. Good for you. I am just a stupid prairie white boy. All right. This week on Deep Space Nine, Odo receives a sick infant changeling from Quark. Receives, buys, we'll talk about it. And tries to teach it to shapeshift without resorting to the invasive techniques used by his old mentor, Dr. Mora. Meanwhile, Major Kira gives birth to the O'Brien's baby. Elise, do you know what I'm going to ask you?
No, what are you going to ask me?
Listeners, do you know what I'm going to ask them? Did you or did you not remember this episode?
I remembered parts of it, but not really. I will say that now that this is the last episode where Odo is a humanoid, I finally remembered that he was a humanoid. Like, every episode when he, like, is in pain or, like, having something happen to him, I'm like, oh, yeah, he's human or whatever. And now I, like, remembered immediately as soon as he was, like, complaining and, like, being a little bit of a hypochondriac in Bashir's office. I was like, oh, yes, he's a humanoid now.
Yeah.
I just want to... Oh, sorry.
I was going to say, and what's more human than waking up and your back hurting for some strange fucking reason?
My back hurts me right now, so I can relate to that pretty well. I will say, I don't remember if I was stoned when I was thinking about this yesterday or Friday. No, it was yesterday, because I nicely went to a brewery yesterday and, like, started on my notes, like, and it was really fun to do that, like, and just have a drink nice. And be chill. And it was cool. One of my roommates also came with me, and they were, like, sitting next to me doing their own work, and it was, like, very, very fun. So I was thinking, if Odo had presented as female, as a, like, while being a changeling, if they would have made him, like, made girl Odo be, like, have her period when she became a humanoid, and how, like, we would have also had to, like, witness Odo complaining of cramps, like, and needing, like, you know, Midol or something from Dr. Bashir.
And have you noticed how your boobs have firmed up? Not that we care about such things in our age. That's a reference to Insurrection, Star Trek 9.
I mean, I will also say that when I'm PMSing, my boobs get sore. So that felt, like, really apt anyway.
That still is kind of a weird joke. That joke always kind of stood out to me as, like,
particularly weird.
To reference it, honestly, like that for the sake of joke. But yeah, back to your question, I'm going to go with that would have been good and that would have been interesting, but I doubt at the time of the 90s and the, like, exclusively male writing staff.
Yes.
That would happen. Like, again, we're in the era of, you know, when we're advertising menstrual products on television, it's that fake blue.
Yeah, it, like, looks like toilet bowl coloring, cleaner, water, honestly. Whatever.
Yeah, that's exactly what it looks like, right?
Mm-hmm.
So...
That's funny.
But I'd hope that they'd address that now. That'd be a good opportunity to talk about, was it, like, period poverty and, like, things like that and access to, like, menstrual products and things like that.
Yeah. I remember when we had, it was, like, later than Katrina, but there was, like, another hurricane in, like, Louisiana, like, later. And I remember collecting, like, money for my friends. And instead of sending money to, like, an organization, we just bought, like, a bunch of tampons and soap and pads and, like, sent it to the charity so they can give them out, and, like, it could be really obvious, like, what that money was being used for rather than them, like, paying their staff or whatever.
Yeah. No, exactly. Exactly.
I also...
Well, speaking of... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to go on to the next point, but I didn't know if your thing was related to
No, it was. I was thinking of a sweaty segue.
Oh, okay. But you got it. I was really curious how they made the baby changeling, like the specific goo, and I really enjoyed that in my reading up on this, like even the producer called it goo, which made me laugh. So I read this. It was from the Star Trek Deep Space Nine companion. To get the right substance to play the baby changeling, the production crew did several weeks of research and like basically did casting sessions, as they referred to it, but like for the goo, like to get it to be the right consistency. So Steve Oster, one of the producers, said that Gary Monick and his crew had to come up with the goo of the right color and consistency that would like hold its form for a moment and then fall down and ooze, so that they can like show it. Like, it's probably specifically that scene where they're like the goo is like becoming that like cylinder. And they spent many nights trying to like have different textures and viscosities and like what would work. And they use like a gelatinous mix and then like some other plastic. And it's just interesting like to think about what they used. But they kind of described it as like some of it was similar to like what you would like pour on someone in like Nickelodeon, like slime, like Double Dare.
Oh, when they get slimed?
Yeah. I thought that was cool.
Well, that's interesting because you think about that, that like process of like trial and error and kind of, you know, the effectsness, practical effectsness of it all, and it's like nowadays it would probably just be even more CGI, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just interesting.
I like the idea that like there's... someone basically had to do like a science project to get this correct.
So yeah, they're making their like baking soda volcano.
Exactly what I was thinking of. Yeah. Unfortunately, this is the first episode that Dax is not in at all. That's sad. I don't know what she would have done besides be there for her bestie that's having a baby, but there were already too many people in that birthing room.
Yeah.
And
this... chiding Worf for thinking the baby was a beverage.
I mean, to Worf's credit, like, I would have also thought that based on the receptacle it was in. Yeah, this is going to be the last episode where we see Shakar and Dr. Mora. Like, they're done. And I've also noticed that Keiko only has two more episodes after this one. One of them being, the episode that there is an episode in the future that deals with, Molly, that's all I will say. And then Keiko's back for the finale, but she's not in any other episodes, in this
that's
show.
Wild.
And I think that's
insane.
There's
like 2.5 seasons left.
I know. Yeah. And she like just has a baby now, and like, we're never going to see her parent that baby, I guess.
Wild.
Yeah.
Does Kiryoshi have more appearances than
Keiko?
I
don't actually remember. But I do like that. I never noticed before that they put the name Kira within the baby's name.
I just made that connection now.
Right as we discussed it. So we definitely have an A plot and a B plot this episode, and they are similarly themed, which I think is nicely tied up at the end of the episode, when Kira and Odo have that go for that stroll, because they're both sad that their babies are no longer with them. Although, you know, obviously, well, Kira is not the mother of this baby, but like, she housed it, so I get the connection that she has with it. Him.
Well, and like too, I think I was reading as well that scene was kind of in some ways added at the suggestion of Nana Visitor, because again, this whole plot had been written because she was pregnant, right?
Yep.
And air quotes allowing her to, you know, be visibly pregnant on air, and she's like, to have, like, you know, carried that baby and then delivered that baby and then, you know, give it up, like, even, like, and I'm sure this is something that, like, surrogates in our world probably deal with, too. Like,
yep.
There's kind of this innate, like, connection and, like, probably, like, a feeling of loss and stuff that would go with it.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
So I think that was a good ad, and the way
I agree.
It was a nice way to kind of dovetail both plots kind of together. And again, we know that Kira and Odo have a complex friendship, and the idea of them being kind of share that grief of that loss, I think is pretty powerful.
So I really want to talk about Bajoran births, because I think they're bananas. I almost think it's a...
Come on, Elise. Let's not judge other people's fake cultures that are on television.
I almost felt like this plot is rude to humans. I'm kidding. Because, like, human birth is, like, not this relaxed and, simple. I mean, I guess it wasn't simple, but, like, she wasn't really in that much pain or anything. She's not supposed to be in pain. But yeah, so Bajoran births are all about relaxation. I definitely think that they couldn't have had a future. Like, obviously, we see Keiko give birth in TNG, but it's really, you couldn't have, like, a relaxation birth and be for humans. Like, human, you cannot change human physiology for your future TV show. Like, humans are humans, and that's not going to change. I would really eye roll if they, like, decided that human births were less painful in the future. Like, it's not really realistic. So I do think that it's interesting to explore another culture and, like, how they do things differently.
Yeah, that whole idea of, like, 21st century medicine, it's much like, is replicator food kosher or not? It's an interesting, like, thought experiment, because, like, it is, at the end of the day, like, it's wildly inconsistent based on, you know, the episode. Maybe that's the most, like, Star Trek thing. But, like, even in TNG, you have, like, early TNG, where Crusher's talking about, Bev's talking about, you know, the common cold being a thing of the past. And then later in TNG, it's like, someone has a cold. And, like, oh, yeah, we get colds. It's fine. Or, like, you know, in Star Trek IV and the Voyage Home, when they rescue Chekhov from the hospital when he has, like, the brain bleed or whatever.
Yes, because McCoy
cures a woman having kidney failure with a pill.
That part always makes me laugh. Like, they didn't have the wherewithal to realize maybe the Russian guy shouldn't be the one in the 1980s looking for the nuclear vessels. Like, it makes me laugh every time. You'd think they would know their history better.
Right? And, like, that's also, like, such, like, a joke or part of, like, the fish out of water thing.
Yes.
That, like, not that we're a Star Trek 4 podcast, but, like, I feel like the further away we get from the Cold War kind of gets diluted a bit.
Yes, I agree.
We were there. We know. We remember. I remember the Titans, Denzel. I remember.
I saw that secondhand. Movie, so I remember it too.
I remember secondhand expressions of Russophobia.
I watched Highlander 2 last night for reasons that I will tell you later. I'm basically podcasting about a Highlander a little bit.
Where the princes
and there's this scene where Sean Connery's, like, 1500 self, like, is in the future, is in, like, 2024, because Highlander 2 takes place in 2024. The movie came out in 1991, for reference. And, like, he has this whole, like, he's taking the fish out of water, like, thing, but, like, he's handling it so well, and he just, like, goes to this, like, fancy tailor, and we get this whole scene of Sean Connery just, like, picking out a really expensive suit to be worn and having it be fit for him, and it's, like, just the best part of the movie. And it's the fish out of water stuff. I just love that.
Fighting to survive in a war with the darkest powers. I know that's from the show, not the movie.
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen the show. So this birth plan kind of seems like my worst nightmare. Like, people are playing random instruments. You're not allowed to sneeze, God forbid. If Miles is doing so poorly at this music thing. I would just be like, can we just play an MP3 of this? And he could just, like, pretend to play the music along. I did think the midwife's rattle was kind of cool. But everyone's wearing, like, matching scarves. Like, do you think, like, it's a specific pattern that is for births? Or is it, like, Kira picked it because that's, like, her favorite pattern? It was really ugly. But I did notice everyone was wearing, like, the same scarf.
Yeah, my implication that it was, like, again, like, part of the, like, everyone would have the same, like, it's part of the...
This is the birthing scarf. Ritual
or whatever. And maybe it's because it's, like, when you soundproof your room or make it a studio, because the sound bounces better off that fabric in the scarves. Who knows? We can make up our own. Our own headcanon situation for that. But I did dig... Like you say, like just how, like, you know, the, like, space culture, like Bajoran culture angle of it all. But, like, I did enjoy the midwife doula angle and the idea that it was, like, you know, a home birth situation. Yeah. Over, like, you know, Kira being, like, in the infirmary and whatever. Mm-hmm. And, like, what's great about that is, like, literally you're an emergency transport away if there were, yes, complications that, like, you needed,
yes,
to do,
yes,
it.
Yes.
You know, which is good, because, like, I know a lot of folks will have, like, doula or midwife births, mm-hmm, in the hospital facility here, just in case.
Yep.
Also, you're not paying for the hospital stay in the same way, so yeah. I get that that's.
I think my sister dealt with that, because I think she wanted to have a home birth, but, like, there was reasons that it's no one's business on this podcast why she didn't. So she, yeah, like, went, yeah, you know, she had the baby in the hospital. But yeah, she didn't have, yeah, to pay for that because she lives in England.
Yeah, yeah.
I was amused by the idea that Kira was, like, in labor too long, and so she, like, kind of missed the window to have the, yeah, baby, because, yeah, her body knew that, yeah, like, oh, if you produce too many levels of this one thing, it'll be toxic. They did give her, like, a C-section option, kind of, that was mentioned, but she's like, no, I want to do this the Bajoran way. Once Shakar, like, shows up and, like, she's not going to have the baby right now, and she asks him if he could stay, I literally fucking hate that he's like, I'll have to rearrange my schedule, but I think it could work. And I'm just like, just tell her yes or no. Like, don't burden this person who's, like, having a baby on, like, what you have to do to make your shit happen. Like, just do it or don't. Like,
yeah,
don't burden her with the, yeah, details. I do think that it was, yeah, really funny that the, like, midwife kind of snarks at him for being late and at Miles for not doing well at the music thing. Like, she is clearly, yeah, there for... She and Keiko are clearly there for Kira. Like, and, I mean, obviously, mm-hmm, Keiko's there for the baby, mm-hmm, too. But, like, it's just really clear that, like, who is being supportive of Kira and who is, like, thinking about themselves. I mean, I think Miles is thinking about the baby as well, but... One of the biggest parts of this story is the tension between Shakar and Miles, which I enjoyed that there was tension. I did not enjoy, like, that they acted like children about it, but it really enforced my headcanon that Kira, Keiko, and Miles are a throuple. Miles is very protective over Kira, and yeah, it's his baby, but, like, you do get the sense that he does care for her a ton, and... Like, we have that kind of awkward scene where Miles is, like, massaging her legs and Shakar walks in, and it's very much like, you're massaging my girlfriend's legs. And, like, Miles and Kira do not think there's anything weird about this because they've been doing this for, like, 5 months. And Shakar is just like, what has been happening in my absence?
Yeah. Yeah. It's,
yeah. I just felt like it was very relatable. Like, only Kira understands her connection to the O'Briens, and I don't think Shakar gets it. And, mm-hmm, I think that anyone that is with Kira is going to have to understand this.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing... how do I want to say this? I know it's played for comedy, and, like, yeah, it does work, but, like, the... proverbial, like, dick measuring about who is, like, more concerned about Kira and who, like, you know, is more supportive of Kira, like, you know, between Shakar and Miles is, like, I don't know, it's just dumb straight boy things.
Yeah, I agree. Because we get to the scene where, like, the baby's going to come for real. And then there's this huge argument about whether Miles should be, like, looking at Kira's vagina during the birth. And, like, Shakar is just not okay with it. But I do think if Kira had, like, an issue, she would have said, like, I want you here. I don't want you here. Like, that. Kira is not a shy person. She is going to tell you if she, like, needs people moved around or if she's, like, worried about that. And I do think it's interesting that Miles is like, she's been living in our house for like 5 months. And Shakar is just like, what does that mean? And like, you like learn things about people. You accidentally see people naked when you live with them. Like, shit happens. And I just think you just get over it and move on. And I think that Shakar is just like coming from the outside. Like, he hasn't been around at all. I mean, I'm sure they've seen each other, but like off screen. So he just feels like very outside of this throuple in a way that like he doesn't understand it. And they both get kicked out of the room because of their arguing. And it's actually like very silly to me. Like, they can't control themselves but to argue.
Yeah. And I guess in fairness to them too, it is like a stressful time, right? So.
Yeah. I do kind of wonder if the goop that is on the baby is like leftover goop that didn't work for the changeling storyline. this section kind of ends where like Shakar is like getting ready to leave and is like, Kira, when are you going to come see me next? And she's like, honestly, I don't really want to leave here for a while. And I don't really remember what happens with them or, like, how that is handled. But as I said earlier, like, we don't see Shakar again. So I'm curious to see, like, I assume, that, you know, how they break up is, like, I don't remember what is said or not said.
Yeah.
And it's pretty clear that Kira at least somewhat kind of wants a baby now. I mean, I don't think she's, like, I'm going to go have a baby by myself, but she's very much like, I didn't realize that's something that I like would feel like it surprises her.
Right. Yeah.
It's always interesting when you learn big things about yourself like that.
Speaking of learning things about themselves, do you want to talk about Odo?
Yes. So this is not something that's new, but like everybody in this show pretty much except for about Odo, like regarding Odo and except for Odo acting this way, treats changelings as things rather than beings. And Quark is no exception to this. So we have a fun scene where Odo is whining in the infirmary that he's extremely ill, but he has a pinched nerve. And I say that kind of on eye rolling, but really, like, if you've never felt pain like that before and you suddenly did, it would be, like, completely awful. Like, humans have a lot of pain to deal with. So I'm, like...
And that's not just the existential weight of being alive.
Yes, exactly. We have physical aches and pains. So Quark comes into the infirmary, and he has what he thinks is, like, a dead changeling. But Odo is like, no, it's actually, like, a little baby. And Bashir is first like, should we put it... insecurity, and like Odo's like, no, this baby has not learned, he didn't phrase it like this, but he's like, this baby has not learned to hate solids yet, so we're all safe here. Sisto comes in and is like, you are this small, and I'm like, Sisko, do you not know how babies work? All babies were small. All people were small at some point.
Man, I like Avery Brooks, I think, like, having kind of that small supporting role this episode, I think he's really good. And I think he's like walking this tightrope between like, haha, I am a dad, like, you know, kind of cheesy dad, like kind of like joking relationship building, but also the ways when he's like the mouthpiece for like what Starfleet wants and whatever.
Yeah.
It was like, actually kind of a dick.
Yeah. I think it's funny with how little he's actually in this episode. It almost felt like, did he, like, I know he didn't, obviously, but whenever he's like in an episode this little, I'm like, did he direct this episode? Like, that's the only time he's like in the episode that little. But I guess I just, maybe he was working on something else that week.
Yeah.
I do think it was interesting that Odo suspects that the changelings send out these babies to see if other species are a threat. And I'm like, that's a really shitty thing to do to your young that, like, doesn't even know, like, what they are yet. But I don't really think by the end that's, like, actually what happened, what's been happening. I don't know.
Yeah.
I still remain that maybe this was, like, a little bit of a test for Odo. I know that's not, like, really what's happening, or I don't remember, but it just feels like that they might have, like, sent this to be like, is Odo ready to, like, become a changeling and back, like, back to a changeling again? Because of this little baby changeling, like, Odo doesn't even care that, like, Kira's in labor. Like, something he would have, I mean, I know he's, like, taken a little bit of a step back from her since he, like, realized he was in love with her and, like, wanted to, like, not be obsessing about that. But, like, he doesn't, he's so preoccupied, he doesn't even, like, visit Kira when she's in labor, which I find, like, if it was, like, a different situation, he would have done. But I do, I also really, well, like,
parenthood.
Yeah. I do love that Odo is, like, treating this baby like an actual baby, like an actual being. He's giving the baby a tour of the station, teaching it, like, talking to it like it's, like, can comprehend, which I know the baby can't yet, but it's good to, like, encourage that. Like, you should talk to your baby. I do think it's,
like, gentle parenting.
Yeah, I do think it is a slightly, and when I say slightly, I mean extremely bizarre to put your baby in a drink receptacle. But I did really, I was really amused by the scene with Worf when he's like, "Why are you talking to your beverage?" It's really funny. Like, Worf was like me in that scene. Like, I was like, why is he talking to a beverage? And I also liked that, like, as the scenes progressed, like, the changeling got bigger and bigger. Like, you see, like, later it's in that, like, cylinder thing, and it's a lot taller. And this is, like, where I kind of want to talk about how Sisko was kind of a dick. Sisko recommends that Odo calls Dr. Mora for his help, but he, like, doesn't really seem to be aware of the daddy issues that Odo has with Dr. Mora.
Yeah.
And then when Dr. Mora shows up, I was, like, a little mad at Sisko, but then you kind of realize Mora showed up on his own because he had heard of the discovery. Like, he had heard about this, like, through the grapevine because he was, like, working on Earth where Starfleet is headquartered. But yeah, I do think, like, Sisko should have dropped it as soon as Odo was like, no, thank you.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess it's not Ben's fault if he doesn't know, because, like, Odo's, like, such, like, a private
dude. Yeah, that's true.
So it doesn't know, but it's just, like, and I guess we don't see him, like, talking to Starfleet and saying, no, give them more time, and blah, 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 but it's just, like, these are the orders.
Yeah, I think there's a really
interesting... making progress... Yeah. There's nothing to worry about.
Even before we get to the point where they, like, are asking, Starfleet's asking for updates and stuff, we have this very big, like, fundamental disagreement between Dr. Mora and Odo on, like, how to treat and help this changeling baby. And Dr. Mora is going based on his experience where the Cardassians were like, you know, tell us everything that's happening here. You know, like, it was a different time. Dr. Mora was under an occupation. So I do think some of his methods towards Odo make sense in that regard, that, like, if he didn't purchase, like, he probably would have gotten killed or something if he didn't, like, do what the Cardassians wanted. Odo is in a much different situation where Starfleet does not operate that way. Yes, we learn that Starfleet wants... daily progress updates, and, like, they're interested in what, because the changelings are an enemy of Starfleet, but they're not trying to, like, they're not, like, threatening Odo for this information. And so Odo wants to connect with the changeling in a way that Dr. Mora wasn't thinking about, because Odo knows what the changeling is. That is the same species as him, or at least what he was up until the end of last season. And Dr. Mora is a doctor and scientific, and probably looked at Odo as a specimen at first. And I think
unknown specimen.
Yeah.
That was his name.
Yep. And I do think that the difference here, and Odo says it very plainly, like, I'm trying to gain its confidence, not teach it tricks. And I think that is very important. And I think that Mora and Odo have a really important conversation that they needed to have. Like, they needed to, last time we saw them together, they didn't get as deep into the problems they each had with, like, how things were going when they first met. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really good that Odo was finally able to vocalize those feelings and talk about why he acted certain ways. Like, you do find that Odo knew how to change a little bit sooner than he showed Dr. Mora, and he did it on purpose because he didn't want to give him the satisfaction. Because, and there are other times he swatted him away because he didn't want to be zapped any longer. And I think it's really interesting to see, like, this conversation. And I really liked the argument they were having, and the acting during the argument was really good. Like, especially right before Cisco comes in and interrupts them. And, like, Renee is just, like, ranting and raving. And he's like, Dr. Mora's Chamber of Horrors. And that line really was really good. And it just felt very real. And I really hated I really hated when Dr. Mora said, spare the rod, spoil the child. Like, that is a horrible thing to say and do. And I just feel like that is a bad... That's bad parenting. And besides from that, I do understand where Dr. Mora was coming from in how he treated Odo, except that one line is doesn't sit with me, right?
Yeah, and, like, it also, like, kind of really drives home the idea of, like, the conflict between Mora and Odo. Like, if you're looking at it through, like, the lens of, you know, parent and child, which the episode definitely wants us to invite those feelings, is Odo's, like, really giving millennial dad trying to break a cycle.
Yes.
And Mora not understanding. You're like, no, this is what I did with you. This is why you have to do it.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
It's very, we talk about, I know not in regard to parenting, but we talk about this at work a lot. My boss does not accept we're doing it this way because that's the way it's always been done, and I think that is one of his best qualities, and this is the only time I'm ever going to talk about work on this podcast, but, like, I think changing things because there are better ways of doing it is great progress.
Totally.
I do like the change in Dr. Mora as well, because I think he softens up as the scenes go by as well. Like, earlier, when the changeling does start to have progress, Mora is, like, a bit passive aggressive about it. He was like, when you did this, I was so excited. I didn't realize you were going to hate me so much for it. And then by the end, when they're both celebrating and, like, Mora says to Odo, oh, he's doing this, like, so much faster than you did. And, like, I'm really glad he immediately says, I'm not criticizing you. I am saying it's a compliment to your teaching methods. And I think that Mora was being very sincere there. And it's interesting how he, like, you know, we have a little bit of a montage of them, like, doing tests and, like, such with the changeling. And it's really good to see that there was some progress on both sides.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Totally agree. It's, there's, like, some recognition of, you know, of growth on Mora's side.
Yes.
For sure.
Yeah. When the baby is finally changing and stuff, they're so excited. They're like, break out the champagne, which I thought was really cute. And because Odo could actually, like, get drunk now, Dr. Mora has, like, gone to bed already, and Odo is serving himself drinks at Quark, and then including Quark. It makes me so happy that Odo is so happy and includes his boyfriend. Like, it's great.
Thanks for selling me our child.
And also, I'm stealing this liquor, which I'm buying for you. I mean, I don't know that Odo has money, but I do hope he at least, like, gives Quark a blowjob for it or something. This is where this gets really sad. The changeling baby starts to deteriorate and actually dies, which is really, really sad. But right before it dies, it, like, integrates itself into Odo's body, and Odo becomes a changeling again. And that makes absolute fucking no sense, but I love it so much. And he flies away as a hawk, the hawk he was going to teach the baby, and his clothes are on the ground, proving that because he's human, he had to actually put real clothes on. And it just is really, really... I love that the first thing he does is fly. Like, that makes me so happy. It just doesn't make sense to me that a dying changeling would, like, make him back into a changeling. Like, that makes no sense. But it's great.
Well, yeah. And, like, I think there was some line earlier that I totally forgotten until I was, you know... Oops, my headphones got unplugged. When I was poking around on Memory Alpha, as one does before you record a Star Trek podcast.
Yes.
And there was some line, I think, in the end, in the season finale, where, you know, it's like, you still have parts of your morphogenic matrix. Like, it's not all gone. It's just, like, mostly gone. And, yeah, it does feel a little, not a little, a lot, like, hand wavy, like, okay, Odo's been a solid long enough, we've milked that for as long as we can, let's just, you know, do that reset and get him kind of back to base, right? Maybe that's my nominee for the most Star Trek thing. Odo does a very good job of, like, gentle parenting and, like, you know, relating to his co-star in the Nickelodeon slime, as it, you know, him recognizing its, you know, self-awareness and, like, or developing self-awareness and sentience and, like, everything else. I just, and I don't know if they changed it because they didn't want to make it too, like, the TNG episode The Offspring with Lol as Data's daughter and them having similarly tragic endings. I just wish they found out some way to, like, actually give the changeling some way to, like, communicate, or, like, for us to recognize that it is, like, a living, breathing, well, air quotes, breathing thing. I don't know how you would have done it. I do know we get the impact of that scene where it, like, mimics Odo's face.
Oh yeah,
there.
We skipped over that. That was really cool.
And, you know, there's the conversation between, you know, when Mora and Odo kind of, you know,
they're excited about it, and Odo's like, I thought maybe he would even speak or something, he says.
Yeah
I feel like just him,
but, like,
moving,
I think it's like, I think Mora's like, sorry, go ahead.
I was saying, I think the episode was really just trying to show the sentience by having him move around. Like, I agree that there could have been, maybe could have been more, but I don't know what that more would have been.
How it been? Yeah. And I think the only reason it kind of, like, sticks out to me is the idea of, like, we don't know if that was the changeling's dying wish, was to, like, you know, merge with Odo and, like, give him that gift back, like Mora says. And it's just, like, I want to believe, and maybe it's more powerful if you just choose to believe it and you don't know for sure whether that was the intent or not. But, yeah, that was just was kind of sticking out for me, you know?
Yeah,
but that's a pretty big nit to pick, I guess. Hey, so
that's all right. That's what we're here for, picking the nits.
Right.
So we have some somewhat resolved daddy issues by the end of this episode. And they hug. I'm not sure about you, but I didn't personally have any sort of thirst quencher for this episode. I did not find the arguments between Shakar and Miles sexy or hot for Kira. Like, I eye rolled them.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna say we pass on this one.
Yeah,
maybe
it's not
today.
A particularly thirsty episode, right?
Yeah.
So then I guess then it's time for the most Star Trek thing. Again, maybe it's like a finding a way to reset a character back to base would be mine.
That's a good one. I would say in the tradition of Spock and Sarek, we have daddy issues.
William and Kyle Riker as well.
Yes, exactly. And I was telling you earlier before we were recording,
Kelvin Kirk and Dead Dad.
Yeah.
And Thor.
And I'm reading the novelization of Star Trek Generations, and unlike the movie Generations, McCoy and Spock have like very minor roles in this book. DeForest Kelly and Leonard Nimoy did not want to come back for the movie, so that's why they're not in it. But it is interesting, the reason that they talk about, they like the way they talk about it is like Spock is like on a mission with like Ambassador stuff, like with Ambassador Sarek, and he literally refers to his dad as Ambassador Sarek to McCoy, and I'm just like, okay, y'all know Sarek, like you can say like, you know, I'm hanging out with my dad. He's so formal about him. I mean, Sarek is a shitty dad, but, well, yeah. I don't know what those kids would do without Amanda. That's all I have to say about that. But yeah, daddy issues.
Well, Elise, until next time, where can folks find more of you on the internet?
You can find me on Blue Sky, Letterboxd, and Storygraph at Chicken Tendi. That's T-E-N-D-I. You can find my other podcast, Fang Bangers Pod, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Fang Bangers Pod. That's bangers with a Z or a Z, as well as anywhere you listen to podcasts. Also, it's being recorded now, and I'm not sure when they're going to get released, but I will be guesting on two episodes of Friend of the Pod, Lazzy's podcast, Asimovcast, talking about the movie Highlander and the movie Highlander 2, The Quickening. Those will be two separate episodes. I will update us more by when I find out when those are coming out. What about you?
Awesome. Yeah, you can find me on Blue Sky and Letterboxd, that's what it's called, at Mattyhugh, M-A-T-T-H-U-G-H. You can catch us together on Blue Sky and Instagram at PodWraiths, and you can email us at podwraiths@gmail.com.
Remember to rate and review us on the podcatching system of your choice. Thank you again to our editor, Melissa, and DJ Empirical for our interstellar theme song.
Until next time.